Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
Shopify presents cool sheets from AHA to...
I suffered from the wrong kind of hot in bed, heat-induced insomnia. That was my AHA moment, bed sheets that keep you cool. Then I thought, how do I even sell bed sheets? That's when I had the idea that made it all possible, signing up on Shopify.
This is Possibility, powered by Shopify. Sign up for a free trial at shopify.com/offer22. shopify.com/offer22.
This episode is sponsored by FX's Kindred, the original series only on Hulu. Based on Octavia E. Butler's best-selling novel, FX's Kindred centers on Dana James, a young Black woman and aspiring writer. Dana begins to settle into her new home in Los Angeles and is violently pulled back and forth in time. She emerges at a 19th century plantation and is confronted with secrets she never knew ran through her blood. FX's Kindred, all episodes now streaming only on Hulu.
The Bucs never stop here. You're listening to Green and Growing, hosted by Sparky Pfeiffer and Nathan Marzion.
For Nathan Marzion, today is our guy, Kyle Madsen, 95.7 The Game in San Francisco. And Nathan Marzion with the night off as we get ready for Bucks and Warriors coming up on Tuesday night as we record this on Monday afternoon. Follow Kyle on Twitter at Kyle A. Madsen. See Sparky Pfeiffer with you from 1250 AM, The Fan. So Kyle, first things first, normally back in the day when I had shows on SSP and we had a staff of people, we would, you know, split shows. You'd give us a show and we'd simulcast shows together and all that stuff. But yeah. You yourself were never on really any of our shows per se. So this is the first time really where we get the true interaction of going back and forth, right? Is that right? Or were you on the day Madness with me at some point?
No, I guess that's right. We've interacted a lot setting up those simulcasts, and we've talked Christmas trees.
Lots of Christmas trees. I have added another one this year, so we are at 15 this year in the house. We are at 7 in the living room, 5 full-size Christmas trees. We added a flock pink tree for our baby Tatum Grace, who's 4 months old. So that is now in the living room. And then we got a couple 4-foot trees in the living room. So yeah, that's where we're at on that.
As somebody who loves to soak in the holiday season, that sounds like a little slice of heaven to me.
Dude, that's awesome. You sit in the living room, got all these Christmas trees and the lights on. We have no lamps, no lights. The only light that we have are the Christmas trees. That is the only light we have, Kyle. That is what we live by. And now this year, for the first time in several years, we're getting to host Christmas Eve for the family. So my brother and his two kids are coming over with his wife and my mom is coming over. And should be fun.
Outstanding. That sounds like a great time.
Yeah. Absolutely. So we've talked off the air, but we've never got to do anything on the air. So here is the opportunity for us to get down and see where our opinions are on the NBA as the Bucks and Warriors get to play out. I, at the beginning of the year, before the season started, picked Golden State and the Bucks in the NBA Finals before the season started on this podcast. That was my pick. I think Golden State is loaded. I figured it would just take time for Klay Thompson to figure things out. And get back to doing what he did. I figured it would take time for these young guys to come around. And I think you're starting to see that. Wiseman now finally getting a chance to come back here a little bit. Your thoughts, I guess, on the Warriors, what they've looked like, I guess, to start the season and kind of what they look like now getting ready to play the Bucks Tuesday night.
So they're better now than they were at the start of the year. Like, I think when you look at their, when you look at their record, are they 15-14 or 14-13 now, whatever they are, they're a game over. And I think so much of that early in the year was a combination of a few things. One, just the championship hangover. Like they won a title, and then 4 months later, they're back playing basketball.
Yep.
There's Klay Thompson, who you mentioned, didn't play at all in the offseason. So he's basically getting a training camp and a preseason in NBA games. They're trying to work in the Ty Jeromes of the world and the Anthony Lambs of the world. And then, of course, James Wiseman and Jonathan Kuminga and Moses.
Who's coming around? Kuminga's coming around. Yeah.
Kuminga can play. Kuminga's good.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what they were waiting on, because I think they went into this year, and I think a lot of Warriors fans went into this year thinking, okay, Kuminga and Moody and Wiseman will have it figured out and they're going to contribute right away. And that just wasn't the case. So the Warriors had five guys they could play. They're starters, with Klay Thompson struggling, but then you had Jordan Poole struggling. And so this player that you paid and you were going to rely on is not playing well, on top of the fact that these young players that they had weren't playing well. And now they're leaning on, like I said, Ty Jerome and Anthony Lamb, on top of Steph and Draymond and Klay kind of going through the motions and knowing early in the year, hey, it's October. Like,
doesn't
not
matter.
Locked in yet. Yep. Right. It doesn't matter. So now they're in a spot where, all right, they were at 500 in mid-December. And Draymond said, like, they had a, the veterans had a talk with the younger guys and, like, now it's time to lock in. Now it's time to start stacking wins. And sure enough, they go out against the Celtics on national TV and smoked them.
Yep.
Which I was not ready. I thought, okay, maybe they can win. I think the Celtics were only favored by a couple points, but it's like, yeah, they could pull this out, but there was never a point in that game I thought they were going to lose. And the contrast between that and the team we were watching a month ago, 4 weeks ago, it is just so stark. And now I think they're that team that you talked about. Like, before the year, it's like, okay, Jonathan Kuminga's solidly in the rotation, brings a lot of defensive versatility. Yep. He's doing the right things on offense now, which was a big deal. Steph Curry's playing at an MVP level. Jordan Poole's starting to get his swagger back a little bit. Draymond Green's playing really well. And now you kind of start to see the foundation of a team that can actually contend start to be built a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much spot on. Now, you had some of the drama that obviously has gone with all of this with Draymond and Jordan Poole and all of that. So how did that play out locally? Because obviously from this side, from where we are, I can't stand Draymond. So when I saw it, I was just like, well, this comes with having that dude. Like, I'm sure this probably isn't the first time. Might have been the first time I got out publicly. But I bet you it's probably not the first time that there's been an altercation between Draymond and a player while Draymond's been in Golden State. That's who this guy is. Like, he plays on the edge. That's kind of what his personality is. And when you get a guy like that with that competitive fire and how he goes about his business, stuff like that's going to happen. Michael Jordan punched a guy. I mean, that type of stuff, that's right. That type of stuff is going to occur. But the key is, when Michael Jordan does it, everybody knows he's Michael freaking Jordan. Okay. Draymond Green, who, as I've said numerous times, I don't like, who I think is, you know, the most expensive role player in the NBA, is a guy that isn't Steph. Right. He's not the guy on that team. He's not Durant. He's not Giannis. He's that secondary complementary piece. But he is probably the leader or one of the main leaders on that team. And that's probably how you get around him doing what he did.
Yeah, that was the big kind of question, though, going in is, OK, so Draymond. So the way this played out over here, I was on BART, our transit system.
Yep.
And I see the TMZ report that Draymond Green punched a teammate. And it's like, he hit him? Like, all physical altercation? Like, to what extent? And then the video comes out, and it's like, oh, this is bad. This goes beyond a pushing and shoving match, or, you know, a swing and you know, didn't make contact, but there was some like, no, he cold cocked a teammate in the face. And one of his young teammates that's supposed to be the next guy for the Warriors. And I think he lost a lot of goodwill in the locker room. Just all the reporting coming out was there was this iciness around Draymond Green. And the concern was with the Warriors, and I think this also played to some of their struggles early in the year, was he was their heartbeat, quote unquote. Like, yes, Klay's a better player. Steph's a better player. They've had so many better players than Draymond Green. But what he does for them, just with schematically, defensively and offensively, is you know, different conversation, but just emotionally,
yeah,
was it mattered. And it might not matter in October or November, but you know, there were the game two against the Celtics in the finals. Draymond Green catalyzed the Warriors win. First possession, he just gets on the ball on Al Horford and steals it from Al Horford and just sets the tone that way. But the flip side of that is what you said. Like, he's always walked that line. Okay, he's going to get teed up. Okay, he's going to yell at a teammate. Okay, he's going to have his altercation with Durant on the court against the Clippers. He's going to get into it with Steve Kerr in the locker room in Oklahoma City. And he'd always walk the line. But when he swung at Jordan Poole and punched Jordan Poole in the face, it became like, oh, he's not walking that line anymore. He's now gone overboard.
Yep.
This is no longer acceptable. You can walk right up to the line, but as soon as you cross it, it doesn't work anymore. And you could tell in the pressers, Kerr didn't have his back. Steph didn't have his back. Klay didn't have his back. Nobody was on board with like, ah, it's Draymond being Draymond. It was like, no, this is bad. And it might alter the course of Draymond's career moving forward. The question for the Warriors this year was, can they get over that? And can they allow Draymond to get back into that emotional leadership role for a title run or for a push for a title?
Right.
And I didn't think they'd be able to, especially with the way the season started. But over the last couple weeks, they had a team meeting. Jamichael Green said they aired out some things that needed to be aired out, and they said some things that needed to be said that hadn't been said yet. And that had to do, they what only really got out was Klay and the shots he was taking, because his shot selection was abysmal early in the year. Uh-huh. But I think there was
something. And he wasn't hitting them. That's what made it worse.
Correct. Yeah. He was shooting a poor percentage on low percentage shots. Like, right. You can't do that. So I think that there was definitely some Draymond Jordan Poole stuff in there too, because ever since then, there's been a little bit of a switch that's flipped. And they had a bad loss in Utah when the vets were sitting, and you know, you don't love that, but are they a championship caliber team right now? No, but they're heading that direction. And I think it's in part because Draymond Green's kind of reestablishing himself in that leadership role that he had. Whether that continues beyond this season, I don't know, but the Warriors need him to be there if they're going to contend.
So that's the thing, right? And I listened to you guys on and off during that whole thing, just kind of see what the feel was out there. Mm-hmm. Did anybody bring up the fact that this all happened because Draymond is probably concerned he's not going to get taken care of again by Golden State?
Like, yes.
This is probably the end of the run. Got this young dude flaunting around, saying how he's rolling in it now and everything else got taken care of. And Draymond, the vet that's done so much, feels like he's owed to get paid one more time by Golden State. And that's what led to that. If Draymond had already been paid, Draymond would not have cared about what Poole was doing, would not have bothered him in the least. But because he wasn't, and he was frustrated by his own contract situation, he took it out on the kid from Milwaukee.
Yeah, 100%. That I think that's what it was. They swear up and down that that's not what it was, but that has to play a role. Like, there's no way Jordan Poole said something so egregious to Draymond Green that Draymond Green swung on him, unless it had to do with like guys always talk about their pockets. Like, don't count another man's pockets. I'm not worried about another man's pockets. Like, that to me has to play some kind of role, whether it was something Poole directly said, or whether that was just a building tension. Like, that's some of the reporting out here has been around, like, this push and pull between the vets and the young players, and how last year it was the vets really pulling the young players along. Well, now it's starting to kind of shift the other way a little bit.
So, and how does this end then? So, I mean, based on what you're saying, and again, Bucks fan talking to a guy that talks about Golden State, you know, all the time, Kyle Madsen from 95.7, the game in San Francisco. So does this end with them trading him? Does this end with them just letting him walk away at some point? Like, because if you train him at the deadline, and if he is truly the heartbeat of this team, that is going to just screw everything
right
up
right
going into the playoffs if you trade him. And while I don't like him, he is perfect for what they need. The right nitty-gritty, dirty guy to get the rebounds, the sheriff to make sure nobody screws with Steph or anybody and step in the way of anybody, you know, trying to punk anybody on that team. The guy that's going to make unbelievably great passes at the right time, outlet passes or whatever the case may be. Like, he fits what they need, but as I've stated numerous times, he's not worth what they're paying him, but he is for what he does within that team. But if you take them away and go win a game, he's shown time and time again, he can't. He doesn't have the offensive skills to get the job done. He's not that guy. He's never going to be that guy. So he probably understands that, okay, Golden State doesn't pay me, I'm going to get paid by anybody else either, more than likely. And I'm screwed. At this point, this is going to be it. So that's, for me, if I'm Golden State, I think I just let him walk. As bad a business as that is, you probably should trade the guy and get something in return and not just let him walk away for nothing. But I kind of feel like that's probably the best play if you're trying to win a championship on the way out.
So I don't think they're going to trade him this year. I just don't. A, I don't know what they would get back for him. And B, I think they think that they can win a championship again. And I don't think they can do that sans Draymond. Particularly because, like I said, I don't know what you're getting back for him. And is what you're going to get back for him going to help offset the loss of him? Because so much of, like, this is one of the big things with Kuminga and James Wiseman, and why James Wiseman is down in the G League affiliate in Santa Cruz, and why Moses Moody isn't in the rotation currently, is because Jonathan Kuminga has figured out how to play with Steph. And that's the big deal. It's like, can you play with Steph? And Draymond Green plays with Steph better than anybody. And you just laid it out perfectly. If Draymond Green hit the open market tomorrow, he's not getting half of what he gets from Golden State.
No chance.
And I think, honestly, the only team that would be willing to take him on right now is probably the Lakers with LeBron, because LeBron is the only person that can kind of, I guess, I don't want to say rein him in. That's not what I'm looking for.
Even they don't make sense because they have no shooters.
Right.
That's a problem there, too. You got to put him with a team that's got shooters that where he can be inside and dish in those outlet guys, and that's where he's got to be. So you got to find a team with guys that can shoot the basketball around him. And
that gives LeBron too much team building credit, I think, that he was Houston? Thinking about that.
I mean, does Houston make sense to be a guy that walks in the locker room and tries to show these young guys how to win? But him and John Lucas get down together?
Are those guys going to take him seriously now after punching Jordan Poole?
Well, like, they'd be scared of him.
My co-host for the 49ers podcast I host is now the Kings beat writer, the Sacramento Kings beat writer.
Oh, that's my second team right now, buddy.
Dude, the Kings
there's
are
a
so
lot
much
of Kings love out here in Wisconsin right now. I'll tell you that much.
I broke into radio with the Kings flagship and was there for a lot of years. So
Sacktown
I have this
Sports?
Weird soft spot. That's the one.
Yeah, my buddy Rami Makloff, who did afternoons here, is their afternoon guy.
Oh, okay.
Cattles and Rami. Good. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So that's where I worked for a long time before coming to 95.7. And so I have this soft spot in my heart for the Kings. So shout out to them.
They're playing well.
Chris, my co-host brought up, he goes, the Kings could use Draymond. And I think that's right to an extent, but I'm imagining a scenario where Draymond, which, like you said, he's done all these great things with Golden State, but in a vacuum, he's just like, he's a plus defender, a plus defender. He can't shoot. He's doing better finishing around the rim this year. He's been more aggressive there. But, like, is he going to go in and try and tell De'Aaron Fox what's good? Like, no
chance.
And then
you're going to have him and Sabonis, who both can't shoot outside, both inside clogging the middle. Hell no.
Right. Like it just, it was right. So there's just, like, the fit isn't there for him with a lot of teams. Do teams want him? Would they take him seriously? Like, he poses all sorts of issues now.
Yep.
So I don't know where his future lies. And that's why I think if you're the Warriors and things go well this year, you tell them, like, all right, opt into your $27 million next year and we'll work something out, you know, after that. But I don't think there's any incentive. Like, Draymond floated this offseason that he wanted a max extension, which for him, the Rays wouldn't be crazy, but it's like, what's the incentive for the Warriors to do that outside of, like, a thanks? There's not one because he's not going to get it elsewhere. That's just bad business. So
correct.
I think they let him opt in, or maybe he wops out. Like, maybe this season goes poorly and he's like, I'm done here. Like, my time in Golden State was great, but I'm done. And he goes and tries to finish his career somewhere else. But as far as what Golden State does, I think they just sit on their hands and, like, dude, ball's in your court. Like, go win your teammates over and we'll talk about it.
Yeah, I think that's exactly how it has to be at this point. No question. Of the young guys on that team, is Kuminga going to be the best one?
Yes. Like, he has the most talent for sure. James Wiseman, just the feel isn't there. Like, I just don't. You know, when you watch an athlete and you just kind of wonder, like, how many, you can tell James Wiseman hasn't played a lot of games. Like, there's just certain, like, feel, like, like, I don't want the 49ers with Brock Purdy yesterday. Brock Purdy's played a ton of football in his life. And you could tell when he was in the pocket, the way he was moving, it's like, oh, that guy's just played a lot of football. Like, he just kind of gets it. James Wiseman's the opposite. So he has a huge learning curve. Moses Moody, like I said, can't crack the rotation. I think he'll eventually kind of be a rotation 3-and-D guy. Right. But Jonathan Kuminga can hope, man. And he's starting to pass the ball. He's starting to be more aggressive offensively. Defensively, he did a really good job on Luka when they played the Mavs. He was guarding Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum the other night against the Celtics and having a little success. So if he can turn into that kind of switchable wing defender who can stand in the dunker spot on offense, yep, and hammer down putbacks and alley-oops, then I think he's going to be a very, very good player.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, so the Warriors in the West. I told you that was my pick prior to the year. Now, as you sit back and you look at the West, the team that I picked last year, and Murray never really came back, was Denver, because I thought Murray would be back at some point. He really never got back. Denver is a team I still think is loaded and can be a real problem here in the West once we get to the playoffs, providing everybody is healthy and doing what they can. I don't know how many other teams I look at and truly buy into at this point. I'm not on the Suns bandwagon. Can't get myself on the Suns bandwagon. They just aren't physically tough enough, mentally tough enough. There's just not a lot that I kind of get into with the Phoenix Suns.
Me neither.
Then there's the Zion team, right, that everybody wants to talk about how good Zion is. But can Zion stay healthy? Can he still be playing in the playoffs? Like, that's the thing. I mean, we can get all excited in December that Zion looks good and the Pelicans are playing well, but will they still be healthy and playing well come the playoffs? And it's a horrible thing to say about a dude, but that's kind of where we are with his career. Like, he has to prove that he can stay on the floor before everybody can get all excited that he's going to be that guy at the end of the day. So what does it look like out West for you?
I know that this is probably sacrilege to say as a Warriors guy, but I really like what the Grizzlies do. I think the Grizzlies just play a brand of basketball that is A, super fun, but B, like, their pieces are just, they have good wing depth, they have good size, and those bigs like Jaren Jackson Jr. can stretch the floor a little bit. John Morant is a bona fide one, I think. I just, if this was the year the Grizzlies took a leap and went to the finals, it wouldn't shock me at all. Like, they were close last year, and they played the Warriors really tough even without Ja, but I think that that was just part of the learning process. Like, the Warriors lost before their run that started in 2015, they lost to the Spurs in six games, and then they lost to the Clippers the following year in seven games and got knocked out of the playoffs early. And I think just those learning experiences matter a lot. And I think the Grizzlies learned a lot last year playing against Golden State. So I'm with you on the Pelicans too. Like, I just got to see it with Zion. Like, I'm not going to say no, but if Zion's not playing, I'm not buying the Pelicans. So Get me Zion in March, and then
Memphis is a fun team. I love their head coach. He's a former assistant under Bud back in the day, with Atlanta and with Milwaukee. Big fan of his. Taylor Jenkins, is that his name? I think.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he's a really good coach, and I like Memphis a lot too.
Bane too. Desmond Bane can play.
Yeah, he can play. Yeah, no doubt. So that's the West. Let's look at the Eastern Conference right now. I think a majority of people say it's Bucks, Celtics, and everybody else, kind of in where the East is. Having said that, I think the East is getting better, you know, year by year here. I mean, Cleveland looks like they're getting better for sure. Atlanta is still going to have a Trae Young, and they're going to present their issues as well. They can get themselves back into the playoffs again. You know, the Bulls probably look like they've taken a step back. I don't know what's going to happen there. I think Detroit is on their way. They had a great offseason, and we'll see how that plays out with the Pistons kind of moving forward. And then, of course, Philadelphia, who, I'm sorry, like, Joel Embiid and Harden, fine, great. But Harden in the playoffs, that doesn't usually work well. And Doc Rivers in the playoffs, outside of one run with Boston, that normally doesn't work well with Doc in the playoffs either. So it's hard for me to get up for Philly, like, oh boy, Philly's going to be a problem, when history says they have a couple guys on that team that aren't exactly great in the playoffs.
No, that's, you're right. But I think there's part of me that just really likes Joel Embiid. And just wants to ride the Joel Embiid trade. And just would it shock you if Joel Embiid just went supernova for two rounds and averaged like 40 and 15?
I think I would like to see what Joel Embiid could do against Brooke Lopez that whole time. Because, like, right now, Brooke Lopez is unbelievable defensively. Blocking shots, rebounding. Like, he is doing everything that you could possibly want a guy to do. Now, that is a guy who I've been talking about being perfect for the Kings. You know, Brook Lopez, a rim defender, a guy that can shoot the three and stretch the floor to give Sabonis some room to work and help block shots. Because Sabonis, I mean, he's getting better. He's got a couple blocks in the last week or so. But overall, that's the guy that they really could use in Sacramento more so than Draymond freaking Green at this point. but that to me, that's the matchup. Brook Lopez against him. And then you can rotate Giannis in as well to give Brook Lopez a break to kind of try and help Joel guard against Joel Embiid. The question then is on the other side of the floor, who's got Giannis?
Right. That's the question every team has to answer, though. Like Giannis is the Bucks are a. I love the Bucks. I'm not saying that because I'm on your podcast. Giannis is I think the most likable athlete
for sure.
Any sport right now. He's unbelievable. So I think the Bucks just kind of get slept on because we as in just kind of people outside of Milwaukee.
Yeah,
are just know like okay, Giannis is great. Yeah, we got it. And it's just that just kind of gets pushed aside. And then we see the Celtics. And, like, if the Bucks went and won the finals this year, I wouldn't be shocked at all. And
I think they have every chance to win the finals this year.
Yeah, you get Chris Middleton back into the fold. And, I mean, he's played, what, 4 or 5 games now? 6 games?
Yep, and then got an ankle sprain. So now he's probably going to miss a couple games again. He just got hurt last game. But they also got Joe Ingles, who they got in the offseason, hasn't played yet. And he's been playing with their G League team, trying to get his stamina and stuff up. So he'll be coming back here. At some point, too, I would imagine he's back by Christmas, would be my guess. So now you get somebody that can spread the floor, shoot the basketball, give you another passer. Ingles will help this Bucks team a lot from a bench perspective.
And Milwaukee's in that same spot that I talked about the Warriors being in, where it's like, okay, the regular season's a regular season, but what do they look like in March? And if Chris Middleton and Joe Ingles and
Holiday,
Drew Holiday and Giannis are healthy and playing well in March, like who? Like you said, who's stopping Giannis? Nobody. Like that's just not a thing. So if you get enough from their supporting cast, like I get that the Celtics are kind of the flavor of the month because they went to the finals last year and they're awesome. Like don't get me wrong, but I just
they
feel
have
like
a rookie head coach. And to me, that stops me from saying they can beat the Bucks. And I am not a huge Bud guy. I stopped bashing them. They won a championship. I said, okay, I'll lay off. I'm good. He won a championship. That's enough. I'll stop. Bucks Twitter has not stopped. They're always on Bud. But
where is Twitter still on Steve Kerr?
Yeah, so. Missoula, though, at Boston very well may end up being a great head coach at some point. To me, I think it's very difficult for a first-year head coach to go win an NBA Finals. I don't care what team you give them. I think that's tough because when you get into 7-game series and stuff like that where it's constantly making adjustments, I think a lot of times those guys get exposed unless they've got a bunch of gray hairs on that staff that have been through the battles, been through the playoffs, and help in a large way at some point.
Yeah, and Jason Tatum last year in the finals was, I get he was really good against Milwaukee, but in the finals, I just wasn't super impressed.
Correct.
And I don't want to say like he can't do it, but like I gotta see that first. The same way I gotta see Zion play into May. So I'm super optimistic about Milwaukee in the East. And I think it's just a team that everybody's just kind of penciling in the Celtics right now. And it's like, dude, there's still good teams. Like the East, I agree with you. The East is going to be a gauntlet in the playoffs.
And Cleveland, you know, to their point, they're long. I mean, you're talking about building a wall against Giannis. They've got the length with Allen and Mobley and those guys. They can build a wall against Giannis and make his life very difficult. You just saw it the other night against Houston. The Rockets beat the Bucks. They were running this 2-3 guys at Giannis and building a wall and not letting him get to the rim and stopping him and making other guys have to beat him. Milton gets hurt in that game. They don't get enough from their bench scoring other guys, and it doesn't work out. I think a lot of Bucks fans, too, Kyle, are thinking that Grayson Allen very well may get traded here by the deadline for somebody else. Now, who that other person ends up being, what position they're looking for, I don't know. But that would kind of add another element to this because I don't think there's a lot of Bucks fans super impressed with what Grayson Allen has given them. Obviously, defensively, he was horrible last year in the playoffs after the Bulls series. So he wasn't very good there. Bucks fans were livid. And now you come back this year and offensively he's had his moments, but it's not that consistency that you're looking for. All that dude's job is to shoot the three. That's it. That's all you got to do. Sit there, shoot the three. And if you can't shoot the three at a high level, then it doesn't make much sense. And when you look at this Bucks team as it currently sits with Holiday, Javon Carter, who nobody really knew about prior to him ending up on the Bucks last year when he came from the Nets, has outplayed Grayson Allen, you know, throughout. The question is, if it's Carter and Holiday in the backcourt, because Carter's not that big of a dude, you know, how are you defensively? He's a better on-ball defender than Grayson Allen, but you have a huge size differential. Right. And would teams take advantage of that when you get to a postseason and not a regular season where teams are just kind of going through the motions and running their game plans and aren't really game planning like they would in a postseason matchup?
Yeah, that's kind of the big, but that's where coaching comes in. And I guess that's where, you know, like Steve Kerr has managed to navigate around Steph Curry being on the court. And like Steph's not a horrible defender, but he's not a great defender.
Yeah.
And Jordan Poole, like Jordan Poole especially, like you could see teams just keying on him and really trying to make his life hard on the defensive end last year. And that's where I think a guy like Coach Bud is going to earn his money, because you can't, I mean, if your title hopes can't be riding on Grayson Allen, right?
Correct.
Or Javon Carter. Like that's so it's coaching around that. And I'm not as close to it. I think Bud's a good coach, but again, I'm not, you know, dialed into the Bucks night in and night out. So you guys know better than I would.
Yeah, there's a lot of nitpicking that goes on with Budenholzer and Bucks fans and so forth. And then the other thing too is this, and I want to get your thoughts on this before we wrap this up. Your thoughts on Giannis shooting free throws after games are over. He was in Houston doing it again. He's done it after every game this year, I think. And it all got blown up in Philadelphia with the ladder incident and everything else that happened because some dude kept putting the ladder in front of him and not letting him shoot free throws. What was the take out in San Francisco about Giannis attempting to shoot free throws after a game on the road?
I don't mind it personally. Like if the road team wants to be like, yeah, we're locking up, like we're not going to help Giannis get better or allow Giannis to try and get better, I mean, fine. But that's part of why I rock with Giannis. Like the guy is always trying to get better. And that's just, you know, he's got guys coming out talking about how he's not skilled and he's only 7 feet and all he has to do is run and dunk. And it's just like, there's so much more to his game than that. But free throw shooting is obviously not something he's good at. So I love the fact that he does that. And I love the fact that he has the stones to do it on a visiting court. I mean, that's shout out.
It's funny to me about that.
The honest guy.
And my, the thing that irritates me is when you have a guy named Shaquille O'Neal, his whole career was based around his physical size and throwing the ball in people's faces. That's what it was based around. It wasn't based around a 15-foot jump shot. Was certainly not based around a 3-point shot. It wasn't based around free throw shooting or anything of the sort. It was based around him blocking, rebounding, and dunking. That was his whole career. And did he want to be better than that? Was he satisfied being that way? It appears, you listen to Kobe Bryant back in the day and so forth, that he was completely satisfied doing what he was doing and had no intention of growing his game anymore. Giannis, on the other hand, does more than that, and yet everybody from that era wants to come at him from time to time about what he can't do. But nobody ever brings up from that same era what Shaq didn't do and didn't want to do in that same generation. That, to me, is just mind-boggling. It really is. Truly mind-boggling. Duncan expanded his game. Ewing expanded his game. You could go down. Hakeem Olajuwon. Oh, my God. The dude was unbelievably skilled. Shaq had no interest, and nobody brings it up.
Actually, so I worked at NBC, our regional NBC affiliate out here for a while, and Doug Christie, now an assistant coach at the Sacramento Kings, was an analyst that time at NBC.
Yep.
And love Doug. He's great.
My 15-year-old desperately misses him on the broadcast, by the way. Yes.
Oh,
misses him so bad. Just does not like the current announce team for Sacramento. Okay. Loves Matt Barnes, but does not like the announce team. All right, go ahead.
So I asked him one day, cause we're relitigating the 02 Western Conference Finals where there's the foul on Mike Bibby that didn't get called. And so we were kind of, and it just got to talking about the Lakers. And I asked, I was like, how did Shaq not average like 40 and 30? Like, how did he, like, he was obviously great. He's a Hall of Famer. But how did he, and Doug was like, he was too nice. Like, he didn't want to hurt people.
Yep.
So that was like, he just didn't go as hard as he probably could have. Yep. And that was shocking to me. I just never would have considered that.
Think about that for a second.
Crazy.
Too nice. Yeah.
But again, Giannis, I mean, just isn't that. Like, Giannis is like, obviously, but you don't win MVPs and you don't carry a team to a title by not being skilled. Like, that's just, that's such a silly thing. And he's obviously so much better now than he was 3 years ago or
Hell,
4 years
yes.
ago.
Yeah.
And then, like, the block he had in the finals a couple years ago, like, that's just different. Like, dudes don't just do that. Like, if every guy who is a 7 foot freak athlete, I don't know if he's technically 7 foot, but 6'10", 6'11".
I think he's over 7 foot, but he does not want to be known as a 7 foot.
Right. Kevin Durant had the same thing. Kevin Durant's standing next to Tim Duncan. They're the same height. And he's like, no, I'm 6'9". Like, get out of here.
Right.
But he's a legit 7 footer who's a freak athlete. There's been a lot of 7 footers who are freak athletes. And they don't make it in the NBA. But Giannis has. And he's going to be a Hall of Famer. Like, there's the disrespect that comes to him from current and former players is insane.
And I think about this.
Especially because it's so likable.
You take a lot of these guys that were AAU basketball players, played since they were kids, played all the way up with coaching and everything else, playing against all these other great players when U.S. was clearly the dominant country in basketball. All the way up, they had all this competition. Giannis was in a YMCA league, literally just picked up a basketball like a year or two prior to actually getting to the point of being drafted, and was just kind of figuring it out. The man got to Milwaukee. John Hammond had to teach him how to drive in the practice facility parking lot of the Cousins Center. And getting in a limo to go to Walmart and like thinking it was the best thing ever. Having his first slushie. Like, to even wrap your mind around what it must have been like for that dude to come to this country and play right away. When they drafted him, I did a draft show every year. When they drafted him that night, I said, this is going to get John Hammond fired. Like, what the heck is he doing? He's going to get fired. And John Hammond told me, he said, listen, you can't hit a home run if you don't swing for the fences. We are not going to get a superstar to sign in Milwaukee. That's the reality of the situation. This was the most upside player where we were. And if it works, great. If it doesn't, then I'm out of a job. But this was the best chance we had to get a superstar player. And Larry Harris, who is in the Golden State Warriors organization, who was a GM in Milwaukee, had a similar conversation with him on draft night or right after the draft when that specific draft for the Bucks might be the worst in Bucks history from the aspect of they had like the second or third worst record in the NBA that year. They get to the lottery. That was the Greg Oden, Kevin Durant, Al Horford. Those were the first three. Okay. So at the end of the year, you know, hangnail for this Bucks player. He's out for the year. This guy stubbed his toe. He's out for the year. So they were full in, like, we're getting one of these three guys. And I was like loving it. I'm like, thank God. It was the only year to that point, and I don't know if it's happened since, that the three worst records, none of them ended up with the top three pick. Oh my God. Not any one of the three. It was the only year. They would have picked three. It would have been Horford. They already had Bogut and Red. It would have been Horford, Bogut, and Red. And Bucks history would have been completely different. You never would have had Giannis, probably, whatever. But they would have been a hell of a lot more competitive than they ended up being. So instead, they take E. Gian Leon at six. That's who they ended up taking. And I remember going to Larry going, what are you doing? Going to get yourself fired. And he pretty much said the same thing that John Hammond said. Sparky, I got to take who I think has the most upside and the most talent for this team. That's who it appears to be. That's what we're going with. So that's what they went with. And later he lost his gig, obviously.
But, I mean, there was some residual scarring from that when they took Giannis then.
Yeah, because it came right back to mind. Like, I have already seen this movie. It failed. Right. What are we doing? And
especially
the one thing you don't know, though, right, Kyle, is you don't know the work ethic. You don't know the drive. You don't know the heart. You don't know everything else. You just see some grainy YMCA film of this gig playing. You're like, okay, yeah, he's faster than these like grown ass men that are really slow. Great. But what's he going to do when he gets here? And his work ethic, obviously documented,
it's crazy,
you know, through the roof. And then Jason Kidd, you know, letting him have the letting him meet Kobe Bryant, and that relationship that developed, I think, was instrumental. Him having a relationship with KG because of Jason Kidd and that mindset. I mean, you're talking about two dudes that both have the mindsets of it's me against the world. It's me versus them. I'm not here to hang out with everybody after the game or whatever else. I'm here to be a killer. I'm here to win. He got both those two in his head, and, you know, away he went. Just crazy.
And got those like during his foundational like basketball development.
Yeah.
And I just don't know how you get better than that.
You don't.
Kevin Garnett and Kobe Bryant. Like,
and Jason Kidd, I'm telling you right now, not liked by a majority of Bucks fans here. Just thought he killed Jason. Sure. Thought he killed Giannis because he wouldn't let him shoot threes and blah, 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 blah to this day. And I'm always defending Kidd at every turn about the good things that came out of having Jason Kidd here one way or the other. And I guarantee you, Luka is benefiting a ton by having Jason Kidd in his ear helping him as they go through the motions out there with the Dallas Mavericks. Kyle, thanks so much for coming on, man. And follow him on Twitter at Kyle A. Madsen. Always entertaining. He doesn't have 15 trees in his house, but we're working on it. We're gonna get him there. We're gonna get him. Yeah. Kyle, thanks so much, man. Appreciate you.
Appreciate you.
Take care. Check him out. 95.7 The Game in San Francisco.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.